Should we
about.
Just speak slightly louder?
Yeah, maybe, I guess we can also...
We can also just use our theater voices.
Well, not... Don't use that voice.
Our theater voices!
No, what voice is that?
Voices of the theater.
What? Welcome, noble patrons.
Yes, welcome, gentles all.
This is What You Will,
a tedious and brief Shakespeare podcast.
I'm Charlotte Aline.
And I'm Danielle Cohn.
So I think the general idea for this podcast French language of the court is we want to go through every play in Shakespeare's
all
canon,
of them, but not just, in this one podcast. Don't worry.
Not in this one.
We're just going to name them.
Over time. And sort of just give you our unsolicited thoughts and opinions, do some close reading on them, and I think we want to say a disclaimer up top that, you know, these are all our opinions, this is all our reading of the plays.
Yeah.
If you have a different opinion, you know, it's okay to be wrong.
You are entitled to your wrong opinion.
You're entitled to your wrong opinion.
So yeah, basically we're two fun ladies who just feel like chatting with you.
Please don't call us fun. You just aged us like 40 years. Like, you just became aunts. I don't even have any siblings. And you just like made us aunts by calling us fun ladies.
Yeah, we're definitely like divorcees. If we're like fun ladies trying to get back into the scene.
Just trying to get back out there. I think we should promise up top that we will never tell you that Shakespeare is just another form of rap. We will never try.
Yes.
We're not going to try to make this fun.
We're not going to convince you that like Shakespeare was actually a bunch of different writers.
Oh my God.
That's just another podcast for another day.
If you're an Oxfordian,
we don't want you on our podcast.
Tear your earbuds
get out of here.
And run into the street.
And if you don't know what that means, it's okay, because this podcast is also for you, the listener, who doesn't really like Shakespeare necessarily, but wants to know what we think about it.
If you're like, whatever, pops, Shakespeare's not relevant to me, you know, give it a listen. That's our goal here.
Why us? Why should you let us shovel our opinions into your ear holes?
So I grew up around a lot of Shakespeare plays. I sat in green rooms in a lot of my childhood, just sort of like, you know, listening to King John.
Because her parents are both Shakespearean actors, she would like wander into them and just chill.
I wasn't like a Dickensian orphan child, like... lifting sandbags for pennies. No, because both my parents are actors, so I was exposed to a lot of Shakespeare as a kid, and I've known Danielle since I was 3.
Yes, and so she would come to our playdates, and she, after having listened to the 17,000th rehearsal of a play, would be like, let me just describe this cool story to you, and then we, as a pair of 5-year-olds, would put on a full 2-person production of The Tempest, featuring all subplots, etc.
Yeah, I remember in that one, my baby doll, which my grandfather did find in a dumpster behind the Walmart.
Just facts.
Was playing Miranda. That's and we put her in like a full human-sized dress and held the baby doll at human height. So Miranda was sort of this horrifying baby-headed adult woman.
You know, it's something that the Darren Nichols of our time, that some director somewhere would be like, it's a beautiful metaphor.
Yeah, I think we need to just come out with it right now that this podcast is going to be 50% Slings and Arrows references. So if you have not yet seen
it's required viewing.
That particular Canadian television show, go get right with your life. Get on the Paul Gross train.
And you're welcome.
And you're welcome. And I think before we reveal to you the play we're doing, which it will probably be in the title of this podcast. It's probably not going to be surprising.
But it's a mystery.
I just wanted to read this brief dedication that I stole from the original folio, the first collection of Shakespeare's plays. We have but collected them and done an office to the dead to procure his orphans guardians, without ambition either of self-profit or fame, only to keep the memory of so worthy a friend and fellow alive as was our Shakespeare, by humble offer of his plays to your most noble patronage.
Aww.
So today, because we are going through Shakespeare's canon in an order made up by the human algorithm within our own minds.
Yeah, it's just us. Just we're like, you know what play we feel like talking about first? It's Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
And especially because we're guessing, if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably read, seen, or at least heard of Romeo and Juliet.
And you're probably already tearing out your earbuds because you read this in ninth grade English.
And you were like, ugh.
And you hated it, but we're here to tell you that your feelings are wrong.
That it's beautiful. This play is amazing.
I mean, if you don't like Romeo and Juliet, you know, challenge accepted.
You probably hate love and
women. Well, you
women.
Probably hate women. You probably hate young women.
Yeah, that's the issue here, is that you hate women. But other than that, you're probably a very nice person.
So this Romeo and Juliet is a play about a girl who takes a roofie from a priest.
Yeah, it's a play about why text messaging really could have saved a lot of lives.
It's a bunch of hot, rich teens mocking an old woman who can't read.
Yeah.
It's also a play about how incredibly boring it is when your friend explains their dream to you.
Yeah.
This is the synopsis of Romeo and Juliet in 3 minutes or less. So, we start out, we're in Verona. Everybody's hot, everybody's sexy. There are two families, and they are alike in dignity, and they are the Montagues and the Capulets. They've been fighting forever, nobody really knows why. It starts off with the Capulets.
Oh, and these two Capulet servants are like, what if we just, like, wailed on some Montagues right now, and then they're fighting in the streets, and then the prince shows up, and he's like, can you stop literally murdering people in the streets?
So then we rush over to Benvolio, and he's like, ugh, my buddy Romeo is so dramatic. He's sad about this girl that barely knows him who wants to be a nun now. And Romeo's like, I am sad. It's so sad that she's never going to bang anybody. I'm sad for her. And then Benvolio's like, you know what would cheer you up? If we went to this party that I heard about that the family that literally hates everything about you is throwing, because I bet there will be hot chicks there, and then you'll be over this other girl.
Meanwhile, in the Capulet household, Juliet's daddy, Daddy Caps, is like, you're 13 now, time to get married. And Juliet's like, maybe. And then she goes to this party where she sees
Romeo.
Oh my god.
They're in a mask, but also they can still tell that both of them are super hot, and they're like finishing each other's sentences, and it's the most beautiful thing in the world. And then she goes home.
Yeah, and then Juliet's like, oh my god, nurse, I met a hot guy. And nurse is like, that was like literally
the
Romeo
one guy you're not
like
allowed.
The one guy. Yeah. And so Juliet is like home live journaling about it when suddenly she realizes that her one true love slash guy she just met tonight has been creeping on her outside her window. So
it's
romantic.
It's true. It's so romantic. He's like, I leapt over the wall. I've been listening to you talk to yourself. I know that you have a crush on me. I totally have a crush on you too. What if we got married tomorrow? And she's like, I see no problem with that.
Yeah, and actually Juliet's the one who's like, so let's get married. And Romeo's like, cool. So then she sends her nurse to go make that happen, and then they get married.
So then they're married. Everything's great. Romeo's like, I'm in love now. You wouldn't understand. Everything's great in the world. It's beautiful. But then all of a sudden, Tybalt, who's a Capulet, and Mercutio, who's not anything but is buds with the Montagues and just likes to fight, start fighting. And Romeo's like, no, stop, peace and love, and tries to get in the middle. But because of him being in the middle, Tybalt kills Mercutio, who's his friend, and he gets really upset, so then he kills Tybalt, so then Tybalt is also dead, and then the prince comes out, and he's like, literally, what the fuck, guys, I just said that if there's any more fighting, I'm going to kill whoever is responsible for the fighting. And Benvolio's like, it's not really his fault, because, like, they were fighting before. So he's like, ugh, fine, I'll just banish Romeo. That's the nicest thing I can do here. Justice has been served. Peace.
So Romeo is super banished, and first he bangs Juliet, and then she's like, oh, now I have to get married to Paris because daddy says so, but I think I'll just kill myself instead. So she goes to Friar Lawrence, Romeo's old best friend, and Friar Lawrence is like, instead I'll give you roofies and you'll pretend to be dead. So she pretends to be dead, and Friar Lawrence is supposed to tell Romeo that she's not actually dead, but he doesn't really do that. And so then Romeo shows up and kills himself.
And then she wakes up, sees he's dead. She kills herself too. Both families walk in. They're like, our kids are dead. This is sad. We shouldn't fight. Let's make a statue. And time.
Time! I think a lot of people approach Romeo and Juliet with the attitude of like,
it's a couple that wouldn't
have
lasted.
A couple that would not have lasted.
I think for some reason, a lot of people's problem with the play Romeo and Juliet is the argument of like, well, love at first sight is dumb. And probably they're just young and horny, and if they had survived the play, they wouldn't have had a happy marriage, as though that is relevant to the play.
To which I say, like, yeah, probably not. But that's not what the play is about.
No, it's, and also it's not what first love is about. And also, if we're examining context for a second, it's Elizabethan England. There are a lot of marriages that were like, fine, just fine. Like, so to launch into your marriage with someone who you feel so freaking giddy about, you probably have a better chance at what would have been a comparatively happy marriage than anyone else. But that's also pretty irrelevant. Not what the play's about.
People look at this play and they're like, emo teens.
It's true. One of the things that one of my acting teachers said is if you ever walk into a production of Romeo and Juliet and the pre-show that music that they have playing is sad, leave. Because they're going to play the end of the play, the whole play, and most of the play is not that. Most of the play is much lighter and funnier and, you know, goofy and things happening. It feels like a comedy for a lot of the play.
Well, I think also what's interesting is we have our prologue comes out. First of all, tells you that the play is going to be 2 hours long. I think all media should have someone come out at the beginning and say, this is how long you have to hold your bladder, and then it'll be over.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what makes this play so beautiful to me.
It's true.
So we have our prologue comes out and sets up, hey, there's these two families. They hate each other. These two kids, they fall in love and they die. We know that.
Spoiler alert.
We know that from the top. And then we immediately go into the action of the play and it is a dick joke palooza.
That's all that's happening.
So I think it's very intentionally funny from the top, even with the knowledge that it's a tragedy, which is part of...
I think it's part of what makes it tragic.
Part of what makes it tragic is that these are fun teens just trying to live their lives. They didn't... you never know that you're going to die.
Probably some people know, but most of us don't know. But yeah, they don't know they're going to die. They don't know they're living in a tragedy. They think they're living in a fairy tale and a love story and a happily ever after thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people sort of layer onto the play that it's this emo teen sadness festival from the word go, but it's really not.
No, it's just, yeah, like you said, fun teens living their lives.
So there are these two households of like indignity, and they hate each other. They're like two families, and they hate each other. And it's like very sad, and Romeo is super in love with this girl named Rosalind, which the internet will not let that go. Like, if you, no, sorry, but if you go to Goodreads, the website for, I mean, that whole website is just, like, four people being, like, Pride and Prejudice is overrated at each other forever. But there are a lot of negative reviews of Romeo and Juliet. Most of them are sort of in the vein of, my teacher made me read this and it was boring. I don't speak Old English, which first of all, it's not an Old English.
It's modern English.
This is modern English.
Yes, that's a common misconception about Shakespeare. Old English, you want to look at some Chaucer, you'll be like, the fuck is going on? Shakespeare, we've got a few grammatical differences, but it's modern English. It's just old references.
If you speak it like maybe how a pirate might, it'll rhyme also. Because there's a lot of also like rhymes don't quite match up with our modern pronunciation. There's a lot of like rhyming move with love. So you got to remember every time Shakespearean characters are saying like, my love, they're saying, my love. Like it's just.
And the next time that you also have a friend, a pretentious actor friend, be like, I want to do a monologue for you. And they start talking in an English accent. One, run.
Punch them in the throat. No, punch them in the throat.
Punch them so they can never speak Shakespeare again.
Don't run, like.
No, but actually you can tell that friend that the accent of the time during Shakespeare's day was actually much closer to modern American English with a rolled Scottish R than it is to a modern, like, English accent.
And then after they've fallen asleep from you telling them that, you can steal their money.
So you're just welcome on
right
lots
from
of
out
counts.
Their pocket. But anyway, when
especially
you...
Especially if you punched them in the throat, they're just going to be down for
well,
the
but
count.
Then you also have to leave so you don't get arrested. But when you're perusing Goodreads and, you know...
As
you
only
have,
Charlotte does.
Look, I write for a website about books professionally. So I find myself on Goodreads and am I intentionally putting on the one-star modifier? So I'm just seeing all like the hottest takes from the teens on Romeo and Juliet. I am. But people are really upset that Romeo has a crush on this girl, Rosaline, when he
shows up first in the play, he's like very sad.
He's sad.
He's our sweet Romeo.
He's a little bit sad boy TM, although also his parents and Benvolio, they're all like, he's not usually this sad. So we do get the feeling that even though his feelings for Rosalind are like kind of puppy love, not super real. Rosaline.
You fraud. You.
All right. But even though they're like not as real as his later feelings for Juliet, as we will discuss, it's still, he's whatever.
I mean, it's the people. Okay, first of all, I do get it. When you're 16 and you are reading a book about a 16-year-old who's like, yeah, I have a crush on the hottest girl in school. You're like, that's not what I'm like. Like, it's, I get it. It's the worst thing for a teen is to see yourself in any way reflected by any media. Or, you know, just being a teen is bad. Like,
it's
everything.
It's hard to be a teen.
It's really, which I think is like one of the many beautiful things about this play. And also, I think you gotta remember, look, if you have never invested, like, a large percentage of your time and your life and your Zanga online journal to being in love with someone who doesn't know who you are not a real teen, or you are lying.
Yeah, and also, like, it's an experience everyone should have. It makes you a fuller person if you, like, pining.
And also, I think there's a big difference between, you know, you see Rosaline every day across the cafeteria, and you're like, I love her.
She's so beautiful.
And, like, Romeo's just, he's sweet. I'm not gonna say he's simple, because, you know, he has some puns.
He does, and he has some good speeches.
And
he has
some
good.
But, like, he's the good boy. He's the good boy, our Romeo. But... you know, he's mushy.
He's
mushy. He's writing that poetry in his spiral notebook. He's not paying attention in biology class. And, you know, he's that sweet, sweet boy who, when Mercutio wants to, like, smoke behind the bleachers and, like, talk about fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like...
like, sports ball.
Romeo's like... I'm in love. And, like, the people give him such a hard time for being girly from the get-go.
Yeah.
Including Romeo gives himself a hard time for being girly. Because he comes out all like, Rosaline, I love you. And Benvolio's a little bit like, oh, boy. It's hard being a teen. But, like, I think there's such a difference between that sort of, I've got a crush and no one has understood how I feel. And then when you meet someone who likes you back and you get to kiss them, that is a different thing entirely.
Yes.
That is a whole nother ball game. I really don't think Romeo and Rosalind, I don't think Romeo did anything with Rosalind other than pine.
Yeah, and I also, just side nerd note, I think it's very funny that one of Romeo's biggest arguments in when he's like, I have a right to be sad, is he's like, you don't understand, Rosalind is so hot and she wants to be a nun. What a fucking waste of genetic coding, am I right?
Oh, and yeah, like, she wants to be a nun.
Yeah, and that's a whole thing, is like, if you've read all of Shakespeare's sonnets, which, like, maybe I have, who knows, I have. But Shakespeare has, like, 1,000 sonnets that are, like, talking to this person who's like, hey, I'm sad because you're not going to get married and have kids and you're just too hot to not procreate. And, like, that is clearly a thing that either Shakespeare or just one of Shakespeare's ideas that he thought was worth writing about a lot.
This happens a lot.
I like that he wrote it into Romeo and Juliet just so that even if nobody wants to read his sonnets, they still have to be like, it's sad when hot people don't have children.
Girl, your genetic code is prime.
I know. It's like the Ryan Gosling meme, but he's like, hey.
I'm not familiar with that meme.
Oh my god. Just don't listen, internet, whoever you are listening. It's the hey girl. The hey girl meme.
Look,
hey girl, your genetic code is on fleek or whatever.
I'm embarrassed for you that you said that sentence. I mean, I think it should be said that I'm usually the internet goblin who knows more of the meme. I waste a lot of Danielle's life that she will never get back on her, you know, a one-way voyage to the grave is spent listening to me describe Tumblr posts to
this is a true statement.
Describing vines out loud, making no attempt to pull them up on the computer.
No, just describing the visual, especially when there's no words to it.
I mean, I think, like, almost every couple of days I reference the And They Were Roommates Vine, which, I mean, you claim you haven't seen it.
I haven't.
To be a lie.
Well, I feel like I have now. Anyway, so guiding us back to Romeo and Juliet, which is the focus of the play. Wait, something that you said like a minute
ago. Yeah, the focus of the play.
Of the play and the podcast, the podcast. That you said a second ago, I think is really interesting. There's a lot of like interesting gender dynamics that happen in this play that make it like a more progressive play than I think a lot of
people give it credit for.
Yeah, because people, I think, are always trying to bring old plays into a new century and do a gender bent version and do a let's look at this and that version. And that's like super cool and I'm for it. But one of the things that is sort of also cool is that I think Shakespeare was pretty ahead of his time in terms of how he dealt with the gender roles in this play.
Yeah, and I certainly, like, I don't think Shakespeare was out there trying to shake up gender norms so much as he was just
writing humans.
Writing his plays for that money.
Yeah,
but,
also that.
And writing humans. But
yeah, like, feminism wasn't a thing. He didn't know he was a feminist. But one of the things that's cool about this play is if you look at sort of what we think of as traditionally masculine and traditionally feminine, Juliet is the one who is, A, horny as fuck.
She, girl.
Girl just wants to get
that
dick.
What was so interesting looking at Goodreads, I found it really interesting. Most people's critique of the play, and this is me paraphrasing Goodreads reviews.
One star Goodreads reviews left by
teenagers. This is the only scholarship I have done for this podcast. Is a lot of people, you know, they say, ah, Romeo, he's just mushy and whatever. Like they critique him along the same lines that Mercutio and Benvolio and his parents critique him of, that like, oh, he's too feminine, he's a lover boy. And Juliet, most of them have this weird read on Juliet that isn't at all supported by the text, where they're like, and she's just like ditzy and drawing hearts and roses everywhere. But there was one review that said the problem with her was that she's too anxious to take her panties off, which I was like, I think,
like, fair, but
she
also
is, like, she is. Yeah, I think we should jump to the Gallop of Pace speech.
Yeah.
Is one where...
Well, where she just says the word come over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Come night. Come black brown night. Come, come. She just... Girl wants to get it.
Yeah, and
that... Which is great. I'm for it. Girl, go for it.
Yeah, and it's... Romeo is so... He is in love with the idea of love, as a lot of us were when we were 16.
Or still are.
And still are.
You know that guy. Or are that guy.
And Juliet, she's a lot more tied to reality. Like, in the balcony scene, we get, you know, Romeo's coming at her with, like, I swear by this and that. And she's like, please don't. Like,
just don't.
Just tell me with, use your words.
Yeah. And again, in terms of that sort of masculine-feminine gender divide that isn't actually real as we see in this play. But when we think of those traditionally masculine-feminine traits, she is the one who also is not just super mushy and is thinking everything through and is cautious without being cold, I think,
yeah.
Is cool. Is that she's like, I do want you. I'm in love with you. I want to have sex with you. But even in the balcony scene, she's like, honestly, I would have played the game better if you hadn't happened to stumble upon me when I thought I was alone and was like, oh my god, I just met this guy and he's so cool.
Yeah, I also found on this reading of it, I took some notes, but I don't know where they are. But I found what was interesting on this reading of the play is how analytical and almost like mathematical Juliet is.
Yes.
Because when Romeo makes metaphors, it's a lot of like, you know, oh, the moon is jealous because she's more beautiful, and you know, it's very sort of traditional poetic
language,
imagery and language. And Juliet, first of all, she does a lot of like, what's that word mean? Like, Montague. What is a Montague? Like, that's not hand or foot or any other part belonging to a man, which is means penis. It's a penis joke. It's a penis joke, as are many of Shakespeare's lines. If you don't know what a Shakespeare line means,
it probably just means penis.
That's probably what it means. And then when she finally does, after, you know, she and Romeo have this, I mean, the balcony scene.
Honestly, I read it on the train this time around. I was on the train and I was just so happy. I read like the palm to palm speech and then the balcony speech, and I was just like, I just, love is beautiful and this world is full of possibility.
Aww.
But even in ninth grade, which was, I the first time I had read the play. It wasn't the first time I saw the play. It was the first time I read the play. But I remember we'd been reading it, and I had left my book on the dining room table, and I was, like, walking around, mm-hmm. and it was, like, late. I think everyone else in my house was asleep. And for whatever reason, I just, like, picked up the book and opened it, and it happened to open to the balcony scene. Ugh. And I just started reading it out loud, sort of quietly to myself, and was, like, as a young teen, I was like, I don't know what all of these words mean, but it's so beautiful. I just like the way it feels and the way it sounds. And I do think that there is a part of Shakespeare that is, it's super obvious, but we forget and we get bogged down in, which is, it is poetry, and poetry is written to sound and feel a certain way. So even when you lose the sense of, like, well, that reference doesn't make sense anymore because we don't know pop culture references from the 1600s, mm-hmm. a lot of times you still can get the sense of the line. Anyway,
well, also, I think Shakespeare wrote his plays to be actor-proof. Yeah. Like, the iambic pentameter is not just to elevate the language, which, like, I mean, partially it does, and it's, I'm not going to say it's...
The human heart and all that.
Well, I was not going to say that. I was going to say it's more than a little problematic that rich people have elevated language and poor people speak in prose in Shakespeare plays. But... It also tells you which words to emphasize. Yeah, which words are important.
And it was, in terms of if you're going to write a play that's in poetry, which you kind of had to, it's the closest to just normal English speech. So it is also it both tells you what the important words are, but also disappears the easiest of, like, it doesn't sound.
Yeah, you,
like,
forget that you're listening to poetry, except for, and then you get the palm to palm exchange is actually a full sonnet that ends in a couplet that Romeo and Juliet are giving to each other. And it ends in a couplet and there's a rhyme and you're suddenly pulled back into, like, oh, I'm listening to poetry. But yeah, I just wanted to pull up this one line from the balcony scene where Romeo's being very flowery and Juliet is just like, all right, let's start scheduling this bitch. Like, when are we getting married? What time? You want to get married, right? Okay, good, great. And he finally kind of gets her to say something semi-poetic where he says, oh, wilt thou leave me so unsatisfied? And she says, what satisfaction canst thou have tonight?
Because she's like, are you saying you want to sleep with me? I'm on a balcony.
Yeah.
And he
says, the exchange of thy love's faithful vow for mine.
Which is also like, he's not just trying to get in her pants. He's like, I love you. Just love me. It's cute.
That's why this play is a fantasy. And she says, I gave thee mine before thou didst request it, and yet I would it were to give again. And he said, wouldst thou withdraw it? For what purpose, love? And she says, but to be frank and give it thee again, and yet I wish but for the thing I have. My bounty is as boundless as the sea, my love as deep. The more I give to thee, the more I have, for both are infinite. Which is... beautiful. But also, like, Juliet uses math to be poetic.
And because, again, just to break it down for the cool teens on the skateboard, I know that most of you are probably nerds. You're like, I know that by heart. It's fine. But for the cool teens drinking their Go-Gurt, she's breaking down the amount of love and how love multiplies and how love divides. You know what I mean? She's saying, I've got an infinite amount, and so no matter how much I give, I still have this amount. It's very mathy. Well,
she's, in more beautiful language, she's basically just saying, the more I give of my love, the more I have of my love, because it's infinite.
Yeah.
And she also, she's just like the queen of double talk. She does a lot of, especially with her mom, which we need to get into that relationship at some point, because it's a lot. It's a lot.
There's a lot there.
But she does a lot of like, yes, mother, I will not do more than what you say I should. She does a lot of, like,
she's not lying.
She's not lying, but she's also not saying what she means, which a lot more in the scene where she keeps saying her mom's like, oh, Tybalt's dead and we're sad, but you're getting married. She does a lot of, like, I would rather marry Romeo.
Or, like, I wish Romeo were here within the reach of my hands.
Yes.
So I could kill him, I guess.
But yeah, and Juliet has got the gallop of pace speech when she's waiting for Romeo to come for their wedding night, which is so sexual. First of all, it starts with, we got some trochees in there at the beginning.
Sexy trochees.
Sexy trochees. Which,
what's a trochee, Charlotte?
Well, thank you for that question, Danielle. So iambic pentameter uses iams, which is...
Ba-ba, 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 ba-ba.
Yeah.
I mean, ba-ba. It's pent is in five, there are five of ba-ba.
Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we set our scene.
Lay our scene.
Lay our, well, you know what? Yeah, you win, all right? So
a troche. What a troche is,
a troche is just the opposite of an iamb. So she's saying, gallop apace, you fiery-footed steeds. So it's suddenly our verse is inverted, and it's more exciting. It's just, she's like running straight out the gate. She's so excited. She's willing knight to come. She keeps... One, I love that she's, like, clearly there's a little bit of nerves because she talks about how, like, she doesn't really know how to, like, do this thing that she's about to do.
Yeah, knight and teach me how to win or teach. Lose. Win a losing match, lose a winning match.
One of those two. And I love that she says played for a pair of maidenheads that yeah. She's also making Romeo sort of a maiden in her language, which, again, it's sort of like... Their genders obviously matter within the confines of their society, but don't matter within the confine of their relationship.
Yeah.
That, like, she sees their two virginities as equal, even though at the time, of course, her being a lady is very different.
More important.
And also, for all of those Goodreads haters out there who are like, Romeo's just a player, he doesn't really love her, he was also, like, chasing Rosalind. Like, he's also a virgin. They're both virgin teens who are just so horny. They got married because they're good girls, good kids.
Yeah, but they also got married a day
they
after
got
meeting.
So fast.
They're like, fuck, I want you so bad and we're gonna do this right, but like barely.
Barely.
Like I don't want to go to hell for it, but like let's go.
Yeah, and I think the one line that I get become a stickler about, because as with all Shakespeare plays, Shakespeare didn't like write whole scripts down. A lot of his plays, you know, they existed in fragments because he would write down lines and then the cue line and give it to the actor and they would do the play. So a lot of the folios and the quartos and a lot of the printings of Shakespeare's plays are sort of like half remembered by actors and pieces of what he wrote and also like pieces of what people remember. There's a few lines in every play that are up for debate, and one of the ones in Romeo and Juliet is in the gallop apace speech when mm-hmm. Juliet's like, when will Romeo get here, it's too early, she says, and in most versions it's printed as, give me my Romeo, and when he shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he will make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night and pay no worship to the garish sun. So, in most versions, it's when he shall die. I like it better in the couple of versions where they've left it as when I shall die. Because yeah. Die in Elizabethan England was very...
You guessed it. It's a dick joke. No, it's
well,
not.
Well, no,
but
kind
not
of.
A dick joke. But it's in that vein.
Yeah, it was a common euphemism for having
orgasm.
An orgasm mm-hmm. was to die.
Yes.
So, she's either saying, and when he shall... die, if you know what I mean, you know, take him and like
spread it all,
put him in
the
sky so everyone's like,
that's
yeah,
Romeo.
Or she's saying when I shall die, which I think is the more
yeah.
It's the more interesting version of it if we have this young teen girl who's like, I'm so excited to have an orgasm
yeah.
with this guy who I really like, and I'm so in love with him that when that happens, I just want like fireworks and I want
yeah.
him to explode all over the sky. Yeah, it's very sexual.
Yes, but now you know, die, often a double entendre for orgasm.
Yeah, so every time you see that in a Shakespeare play, you can now have that in your mind and in your heart.
And in your pants.
I just think that's an important thing to think reading this play is how Romeo and Juliet, they're not your stereotypical boy meets girl.
No. And also the fact that he... Like you said, he has pined for another person. Some people feel like that somehow makes it less legitimate. But I think for most modern people who have dated, you date people and you're like, eh, this is fine. Or you want people and you're like, oh, that didn't work. And then you meet someone who you really click with. And I think it's all the more for being not those other things.
Yeah.
So I don't think that the idea of like that any past has existed makes... I think it makes them... all more three-dimensional.
Yeah.
Also.
And now, Goodreads reviews. Fading. Anita Radcliffe, 1 star. I understand that this was written long ago, But Shakespeare really makes me mad. That was all in caps. Dash, sex jokes aren't funny, William. Not funny. So yes, I was offended by this book, and I would be happy if I never read another piece of work by Shakespeare again.
Brandon Shear, 1 star. This was a fairly good book. One thing I didn't like was how much drama was in it. Everything revolved around how someone felt so strongly about another person.
Casey, 2 stars. How can the greatest love story ever told be about 2 kids that fall into insta-love, then kill themselves in the span of a few days? I never understood that. I actually prefer the anime version of this story. This story is changed a lot, but it's mostly the same. At least the themes, which is one word, are the same. Plus, the ending didn't make me want to gorge my eyes out. 26 episodes and I was fully satisfied with ending. ... Much better and believable ending than the original. Okay. ... I turned this into a review of an anime TV series, but I thought people should know my preference.
The Honest Truth, 1 star. We had high hopes for the story, Romeo and Juliet. It's a world-famous book that is referenced every day in the media, along with other stories. But after reading this book, we wonder why it became a classic. Who made this disastrous decision? First of all, the story has many plot holes, and quite frankly has an awful plot. All of the conflicts in the tale could be solved with a simple conversation. For example, if Romeo and Juliet ran away together, so many lives would have been saved, such as Tybalt, Lady Montague, Mercutio, and more.
# justice for Lady Montague.
Romeo doesn't have a reason to stay behind and not run away with Juliet. Romeo doesn't have anything really going on, Verona, which shows why he should run away with Juliet. He isn't employed and honestly spends him time looking for romance, which he never seems to find. But since he finally did find romance, he would have no reason to stay in Verona since he already has what he was looking for. Juliet, too, doesn't have reason to stay in Verona. One may argue that she needs to stay behind because she loves her family, but that is false. So yes, Romeo and Juliet has an unintelligent plot and so therefore is awful. We even quoted some people we know who have also read Romeo and Juliet and agree with us. Pablo, it was stupid. People should not read it. No me gusta. Alan, it was bad. Cusk, it was the worst book that I ever read. Bonquaja, it sucks. Or maybe sucked. It's asterisked out.
And finally, Diamond Fraser, 1 star. I did not like this book. I found it boring, and the wording was not easy to understand. If the book was a person, they'd be annoying. But you'd still kind of talk to them once in a while in the halls. This has been Goodreads Reviews. Thank you.
And now this is the part of the podcast where we read a monologue from the play that we've been discussing in a series of funny voices.
For you today, I have the prologue from Romeo and Juliet.
Are you ready, Danielle?
I'm ready.
Goofy.
Oh, 2 households, both alike in dignity and Verona, where we lay our scene.
In pig Latin.
Umfre, ancient day, ujgre, acbre, ute, une, unimie, erwe, ivilse, udble, aixme, ivilse, ams, hay, unclean,
a. Scottish.
From forth the fatal loins of these 2 foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, a pair whose misadventured piteous overthrows do with their death bury their parents' strife.
Elmo.
The fearful passage of their death marked love, that's bad.
That's not Elmo.
And the continuance of their parents' rage, tickle me.
Like you're on your deathbed.
Which but their children's hand not could remove is now... The 2 hours traffic of our stay.
With a French accent.
Which, the which, if you with patient ears attend, what here shall miss our toil shall strive to mend.
Like a cat.
That's the end.
This has been What You Will, a tedious and brief Shakespeare podcast. You know, we don't have social media yet, but...
Yeah, we believe in creating the product before.
We're all about word of mouth.
Yeah, so, you know, if you found this, you probably found it via social media. So just, like share that.
Just like everything.
Download everything.
Download it onto your hard drive, your soft drive.
All the drives.
Write good reviews. Tell all your friends. Or unless you hated it, then don't tell anyone.
Maybe if you hated it, tell people you don't like. Just tell people that it's good. Whoever you feel deserves to know that. And this has been What You Will.
You forget the name of the podcast?
No.
Somebody was doing a scene where everything had to be an iambic pentameter, and they were like, fuck it, we'll do it live.
So not really a joke, so much as just stretching out the last word.
Live. I was like, it doesn't scan. It's funny. Okay.